Welcome back to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is always your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We're always engaged in the purchase and sale of all forms of precious metals, gold, silver, platinum, palladium, scrap gold, jewelry, diamonds. I mean, scrap gold includes old jewelry that you're not using, folks. If it's sitting around doing you no good, get rid of it. Or bring it in, turn it into something that's more investment-minded, that's it's more measurable and trackable. People come in with bags of gold jewelry that's not used, and they say, well, you know, I thought I'd keep some gold around. Well, if you ever need to trade with somebody, good luck bringing out a broken bracelet and saying, I'll trade you a broken bracelet for 5 pounds of beef and 2 loaves of bread and a gallon of milk. I think it's better to have it broken down into measurable quantities, 10th ounce, half ounce, quarter ounce, you know what I mean? And that's with gold and silver, it's the same way. You definitely don't want old silver sterling stuff sitting around. People have sterling settings, which that era is kind of over. We live in what I call the Walmart generation now, where everybody, or maybe I should say nobody, has anything of value. Plastic is like the commodity of all things. I was talking to my daughter yesterday, I think, and about aircraft. I love aircraft. I wish, yeah, it's another story I won't get into. But we were talking about the fact that the FAA, the Flight Administration Association, or whatever it is, or Flight and Aviation Association, Federal Aviation Association. See, I got it right, didn't I? How stringent they are on flight design, on aircraft design. And that's why we've seen such a minuscule change in aircraft in such a long period of time, because their attitude is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that's a really good attitude to have. But we were talking about the quality of materials in an aircraft. When you get into the fuses and the switching devices and the LEDs or the graphics, even the knobs that you set times and dates and altitudes on, they're built. I mean, they're literally built of the old quality. The concept that the company Restoration Hardware started with, their attitude started out as, we're building junk now, and Restoration Hardware wanted to bring back the old quality. Over time, Restoration Hardware has become sort of a design mogul, kind of out on the cutting edge of home design, but they did start out in building really good quality stuff. And not to pitch Restoration Hardware, because it's extraordinarily expensive, I think they still build pretty good quality stuff. If you look at the prices, you'll understand why. But the point is, the old stuff lasted. We go up to our cabin and we've got this old fan from the 1950s, and it's turquoise blue metal, and it runs and it runs and it runs and it runs and it never stops. We buy fans for our house now. They're plastic. Someone accidentally bumps into them or kicks them with their foot, and the whole front crashes in and plastic flies everywhere, and you throw it in the garbage and buy a new one. This is who we have become. Okay, so factually, like it or not, quality materials like the old sterling silverware, people have silver settings, that stuff's out. People don't use it anymore. There's very little market for it. There are certain patterns that matter, and we know those, yes. But if you have that stuff sitting around, or you know someone who does, turn it into something useful. There's nothing, I guarantee you, leaving a big sterling platter setting behind for your kids isn't going to overjoy them. Leaving them a compact, understandable liquid form of gold, silver, or a little portfolio will. That's good stuff. Plus, as it goes up over time, you can track it and keep, you can keep track of it and sell it when you want or whatever. You can sell portions of it. You can't take a whole silver sterling platter setting and say, well, you know, bud, we need $38. Let's go sell a fork and a knife and a spoon and ruin the whole setting. So basically, a lot of us have that kind of stuff sitting around. Just, I recommend liquidating it. I recommend, if you have old jewelry sitting around, whatever kind it is, just liquidate it. If there's estates, things like that, and you're looking to liquidate that stuff, bring it here. Don't assume that a jewelry store is going to pay you more for old jewelry than we will. That is absolutely wrong 100% of the time, period. We are brokers. We are high-volume, low-margin dealers. We run on margins that other businesses don't even believe because they're so low. The vast majority of the business that we do throughout the day and year is in well down into the single-digit profit margins. What I mean by that is for every $100, we're making a few dollars, $2 to $4. That's our average, probably a 95% of our business is small margin. When you get into major jewelers, everything they do, minimum 100% markup, minimum. So if you have a piece of jewelry that they, you know, and not to get on this too much, but everyone has used jewelry that they have a sentimental attachment to. It's very common that they always think, well, gosh, someone's going to really want this. But if you're honest with yourself and you look at it, people will bring in rings, you know, where they're worn so thin at the bottom, you can't really even wear it. Sure, you can reshank it and all that. But the truth of it is, who would want that, right? I mean, honestly. And we just end up with sentimental attachments to our stuff. And so people bring that stuff in and they're like, gee, I think you should be able to sell that. Well, you just ask yourself, when is the last time that you went out looking for used gold rings that some woman wore forever? The other real misnomer is when someone has a marriage gone wrong that they think somehow someone's going to want their old wedding band or wedding ring. Folks, I'll break some news to you. Nobody wants a bridal ring from a failed marriage. Nobody wants somebody else's bridal ring anyway, but especially from a failed marriage. So long story short there, we buy all that stuff. If you have it around, you know, even dental gold, if you're getting a tooth taken out and it's got a gold crown on it, keep the crown. Dentists, they recuperate that, they recover it, and they go sell it. I mean, we have dentists that are selling us cans of that stuff, and it's foolish to just let it go. It's gold, and we buy all that. So I know that sounds a little corny, it's a little out in left field, but I'm just kind of educating you, letting you know. Any of that stuff we're interested in. Old silver coins, pre-1965 stuff, that doesn't apply to nickels. 1942 to 45 were the war nickels that had a small amount of silver in them. They're kind of a cool deal. We sell those sometimes into investment packages when we have them available. But, you know, in general, pre-1965 coinage we like, obviously, because it's silver. And, of course, we like silver dollars and gold coins and all that stuff. And if you have some of that stuff out there you're wondering about, just let us know. Give us a call. I can talk to you. If we need to see it in person, we can maybe organize that. 401ks and IRAs, we're very involved in. If you've got a 401k or IRA, we can get you hooked up on that, transferring it over into an independent retirement account, which they all fall under the IRA umbrella, which means it's tax deferred until you take it out. A 401k is an employer-sponsored IRA, and so you can transfer your 401k or whatever, you can transfer it over to an IRA, to a self-directed IRA, where you open an account, you put the money in it, you can do whatever you want, you can buy this, you can buy that, you can buy gold, you can buy silver. A lot of people just think that they have to have someone else manage their IRA. That's why it's called self-directed. When you self-direct it, you no longer have to pay someone 2% or 2.5% a year plus back-end fees to manage it. So many people don't realize how heavily feed investments are. You might have mutual funds or any kind of thing like that, and you wonder, why is that thing not really grow? Why is the stock market supposedly hitting these record levels and my mutual fund never seems to do as well as the markets? It's because there's so much fee revenue coming out of that. There's so many people taking money out. The reason that fund managing companies love mutual funds, investment corporations, they don't have to disclose any of it. All of this profit is coming out the back side of that thing, paying the broker. every year, all the time. As that money sits there, they get continuous residual income, tremendous amounts. In some cases, you know, 8 to 10% a year. In some cases, more. The absolute single worst investment that you can make, believe it or not, is an annuity. I'm going to be real candid. Annuities are sold by insurance salesmen, not stockbrokers. And the stockbrokers are regulated by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. Every single thing they say is monitored, and they're held accountable for it. Insurance salesmen, not so much. All that matters is what it says on the dotted line when you sign. I just had another customer this last week with a tremendous amount of money she's put with us. She's also bought a sizable annuity. She got kind of conned in all these conversations. She's telling me, oh, it's paying me this amount and I can surrender it or cash out for this amount. She even calls the guy, gets a cash out fee, how much it is. He gives her a number. I said, look, if that's really the case, I said, I really doubt it from my experience. He's not being honest. And I said, if that was really the case, then you have the first, best, fairest annuity I've ever seen. So she calls again to get the money out. Suddenly, $25,000 disappears from her withdrawal. And she's like, what is this? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's our surrender charge. She said, I asked you about this, and you gave me this other number. Oh, I'm sorry. I must have made a mistake. They don't make mistakes, folks. They're built on lies. I've seen it time and again. When you buy an annuity, you will never get more than your money back, ever. In fact, if you pull out, they've got surrender charges and all this other stuff. But ultimately, you need to do it. They add on these phony premiums. You put let's just say $100,000 into an annuity, and they show you with their bonus premium, you have $110,000, and then they'll say that they're paying you some interest rate. You know, verbally, they'll tell you they're paying you 7. They always say that. But the actual interest rate's 1.2. But then, you know, you have all these tremendous surrender charges that start at 20%, and your bonus premium is really never yours. And so you get $100,000 in an annuity. You have it sitting there 3 years and you want your money back. And all of a sudden you can only pull out $83,000. What happened? Well, what happened is the insurance salesman made a horrendous commission. And actually, I've seen worse than that, folks. You know, they make huge commissions. Those commissions continue to revolve year after year after year. When you pull them out, they get chargebacks. They hate it. They lie to keep it in there. You just have to be really cautious about annuities. They aren't good. Once you turn your money over to an annuity, they have no intention of ever paying you back. They want you to keep them there forever. Their ultimate goal, their second big commission home run, is when they talk you into doing what's called an annuitization, where they basically take your money forever and say that they're going to give you a monthly or yearly payment until you die. And a lot of people will say, well, see, they're paying me 4.5%. No, they're not. You give them $100,000, you annuitize it, they pay you $4,500 a year. That's $4,500. That's 4.5% of the principal balance. But the problem is you're 65 years old. They pay that until you die. And mortality tables estimate that you're going to die at 76. You're already 65. That gives you 11 years average. So 4,500 times 11, that's only $49,500 that they're statistically expected to pay you back. And even if you did outlive it another 10 years, you're not even hitting your 100,000. And then the thing is, in the meantime, they're gathering interest on your money. I had a customer one time tell me, he actually looked me in the eye and he said, well, I had an uncle or whatever that lived to be 105, and he said, if I live to be 105, Kevin, he goes, I'm going to beat them on this thing. And I said, well, that is a really great set of odds. You have to live till you're 105 to come out ahead on an annuity? I'm thinking, I think we can do better than that, Dr. So-and-so. You know, that's not smart investing. I guarantee you. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Christ wouldn't do it. If Christ was on the earth, he wouldn't do it. Now you think, oh no, because he was this poor man who walked around in sandals in the dust. Christ worked for many, many years as a carpenter. He was a real guy. He lived on the earth. He enjoyed it. He, you know, he functioned. He prospered in his own ways. I'm sure he was a very perfect gentleman. But the thing is he still had to deal with money. It's part of the system his father created. And he used gold and silver. And people say, well, that's the way it was at the time. No, it was not. You study Roman history and coinage, and there was plenty of paper money floating around at the time. Fiat currency, folks, is nothing new. Understand, fiat currency is nothing new. Our system is fiat currency. Fiat means by decree. It means by somebody says something's worth money, and therefore it is. Problem with fiat is you're betting on the person or entity that is telling you there's value there. People do not realize this. It is a fact, folks. That is why our current debt holdings, for each individual one of you who's listening out there, is in the upper $1.8 million just in federal debt. That doesn't count all of your personal debt, mortgage debt, student loan debt, but each of us is born right now. If a baby's born into America right now, he automatically or she has over $1.8 million in debt instantly set upon their head. Now, that is a very oppressive, destructive form of existence. Sadly, this country was built strictly for liberty. I mean, absolute freedom was the goal and the desire. You know, bar none, hands down, that's what we did. Our founders were sharp businessmen. They had come from England. They were sick and tired of the taxes. They were sick and tired of the tyrannical regime, and they were literally starting a new country. Years later, we got into Marxism. Marxism began to take hold in the mid-1800s, and by the turn of the century, 1900, it was infiltrating everywhere, including our churches. There is heavy-duty socialism, sorry, in the churches. The churches have been infiltrated with it. They absolutely think that giving is a forced action, and that isn't put properly. What I mean by this is people will read the story in Acts of Ananias and Sapphira, where they all got together in a commune and they shared their wealth. Ananias and Sapphira lied about what they were going to give. People will literally say the reason that they were struck dead is for the simple fact that they did not give up all they had. That is an absolute, complete, and total lie. The reason that they were struck down is because they lied to the Holy Spirit. They made an oath or they made a commitment they did not keep, and then they lied about it. The Bible says clearly, do not make a vow before the Lord that you can't keep. And it says even more so, you know, if you can avoid it, don't make an oath. Don't make an oath to God because you're human. You can break it. You can say, Lord, I really want to do this. It's my desire. It's my will that I do this. Please give me the strength. Please give me the power. Help me, Lord, to accomplish this goal. But you don't say, Lord, I will never, ever have another whatever. I will never have another drink again, Lord. And I oath that to you. Or I will never lie again. Or I will never cheat again. Or whatever it is. You can't say that because you're human. If you make an oath to God and you break it, that is the worst broken promise on earth. As a quick side note, you need to keep your word. Keeping your word is a huge thing. There are many people out there who take that so lightly, they'll commit to their spouse, yeah, I'll meet you there at 7 o'clock, and then they don't show up, and the spouse will be angry. Where were you? Oh, I'm sorry, I got tied up, or I was going to get there, or I forgot to call you, or I had to do this first. Folks, if you let your yes be yes and your no be no, you want to have the most solid level of integrity rolling off the tip of your tongue. You want to be known as a man or woman of pure integrity. You want people to go to their grave based on what you say. Psalms 15, who may dwell in the holy tent of the Lord? And I think it's verse 3 says, he who swears to his own hurt but does not change. When you make a promise as a believer, You set the standard for the earth. You want to be known as a person of integrity, that when you speak it, it happens, and that's it. Period. No questions asked. That's the person you want. So basically, like I said, you don't want to make oaths before the Lord. You avoid that. You make every attempt to be the best you can. Our founding fathers hated fiat money. They knew that our taxation system, well, England's taxation system, was destructive. In the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, no capitation or other direct taxation shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. What does that mean? The Constitution was intended to give the national government greater power to raise revenue. The Articles of Confederation had been a fiscal disaster, but many of the framers remained, they hated, they were afraid of taxation. Indirect taxes, which are generally understood as falling on articles of consumption when you spend money, did not lend themselves to congressional abuse for reasons that I can get into in a minute. But our framers believed that direct taxes needed to be controlled. So they had this apportionment rule, which required that a direct tax, which is a tax on your ability to earn income or on your income, had to be apportioned among the states on the basis of population, so that, for example, a state with twice the population of another state would have to pay twice the tax, even if the most populous state's share of the national tax base was smaller. So it made the more dangerous taxes politically difficult for Congress to impose. They intentionally set it up this way to make it very difficult, okay, that everybody had to fight it out. And also, it was based on a proportion of people. They made that strictly important. Why? Because here's how it works. Let's say they said, we need, at the time, so many millions of dollars. Let's just say $100 million, which they, that's probably a lot of money back then. But they would have to apportion it across the number of people, and which means that each individual would have to pay the exact same amount, regardless of rich or poor. Exactly the opposite of the plank of communism that calls for a progressive income tax, okay? So it's just the opposite. Why? Because if your tax is $175 and people on the low end can't afford it, they're going to raise ruckus. They're going to say, no way. We can't do it. You're going to get an actual response from the people. We are infusing these taxes on ourselves at levels that are unfathomable. And it was a way, it was really, they designed a way to make it darn near impossible to impose a direct tax. This is why we came through, this is why the socialists came through in 1913, creating the 16th Amendment, which basically overrode the Constitution's forbiddance or, denial of direct taxation. They did not want it. They did not like it. They knew it was wrong, and they knew it was the beginning of a curse on a nation. Ironically, when we started the Federal Reserve Act, which began fiat currency, we started taxing. Now, if you really look at the amount of money we spend and where it comes from, and the fact that every bit of it is backed by debt and every bit of it is created out of thin air, you'd realize we don't even need an income tax. It is strictly a redistribution of wealth, vehicle. And you might think, if you're down on the low end, you're thinking, so what? It's fair. The rich, the rich don't need all that money. Folks, you don't understand that that is the vehicle by which an economy is robust. People, the left, the socialists, want you to think that if money gets accumulated by a very wealthy individual, that it is somehow a bad thing. That, like, they're going to just hoard it up. They're going to do nothing with it. And they're going to somehow take it from you. I want you, each of you, to understand what zero-sum thinking is. Zero-sum thinking is the concept that there is a fixed amount of money in the world, and if I have some, that means you don't. It is a lie. There is not a fixed sum amount of money. We create wealth. If you don't believe it, then just use your brain this way, okay? 200 years ago, how much development and industry existed in America? How about west of the Mississippi? Pretty much none, all right? Now it is absolutely a robust, thriving, urban, and metropolitan mecca. It's a boomer, right? There's money all over the place. Fly over this, you know, the west and midwest of the country, look down, and just be astounded at the level of real estate holdings, and et cetera. Massive wealth. Where did it come from? We created it. God made us as humans his only creation that can create wealth. God, too, can create wealth because he's God. We are made in his image. We are created in his image. The principle, the purpose of that statement is that we are created in his image. He creates, we create. He created us, we create wealth. That is what makes us unique above all other creations. That and the fact that we somehow have the ability to possess, harbor, whatever you want to call it, both good and evil, technically simultaneously. Now, you can get into psychological issues where people say it's impossible to think negative when you're speaking positive or whatever. That's a whole different concept. But the fact is that we can possess good and evil, which is why we will one day judge the angels. Our founding fathers knew the threat. They knew the destructive method of direct taxation. Our thought process now in this sick taxation system is so anti-constitution and so pro-Marxist, it's unbelievable. And where I started on this is the debt levels. Our Federal Reserve does not need us to pay taxes. They collect taxes just to bring all the money back to the government. So what they do in a fiat currency system is they create money out of thin air. They slap it on your back as debt. Now, think about this. If they make, let's just say, let's say the Federal Reserve makes $100,000. We'll use that number, okay? So ultimately, with our taxation system, after four or five turns of money, every penny is back in the hands of the government, every penny, okay? So ultimately, you're giving all of that back, but we owe it all in debt. So they give you the money, $100,000 as a citizens. We owe $100,000 in debt, and then they tax us and take it all away. How can you pay that debt off if they've taken all the money away? And you might think, oh gosh, that it can't be that simple. Yeah, it is. It's an upward spiral that never ends, and we will always be in debt. The system is designed for permanent indenture system, and we ultimately, we'll all end up being bankrupt slaves if this is never corrected. I have no faith in the system to ever correct itself. Politicians either don't get it or it's an insurmountable level of change. They would have to hyper-educate the people at such a level. And now that we have been programmed to not be able to handle over 2 or 3 minutes of reading, our attention span as Americans has hit an all-time low. USA Today used to write articles that didn't last more than 4 to 5 minutes of reading. Now they're going to 2 or 3 minutes because they say that's how short the American attention span has become. How then could they ever educate us on higher levels of understanding about how the Federal Reserve System has destroyed us? And the short attention span with social media, 160 character tweets, all this stuff is a perfect way. It is a perfect way for them to draw us into socialism because of oversimplification of concepts. We accept oversimplification. We say, he's a racist. This weekend we had a die-in, that's where a bunch of kids lay like they're dead all weekend, at a statue of Abraham Lincoln in Illinois. Why? Because Abraham Lincoln owned slaves, they say. So they want the statue taken down. Abraham Lincoln, the man who gets the credit in history as a Republican, by the way, for emancipating, freeing slaves. This has gone so far over the top, I cannot even believe my eyes. I can't believe what I'm seeing. I can't believe the foolishness. I can't believe the media won't even use their head to say, wow, is this foolish or what? This is absolutely, I mean, we've truly lost it, right? Every week, what am I saying? Oh, we've lost it. We've lost it, folks. We've really, really lost it here. So, you know, we're heading down the wrong road. This is all intentional. Obama's super behind it all. And but anyway, on the taxation thing, I'll try not to spend too much of time on this, but essentially we'll just leave it at that. The views that, you know, in 1787, they had the term direct taxes, and it meant that it included anything beyond land use taxes. And the conventional wisdom was that it does not, based on dicta in a certain law in a certain case in 1796, which held that a tax on carriages was an excise rather than a direct tax. Justice William Patterson said he thought that the provision was designed to allay Southern fears of a federal tax on their land and slaves and nothing more. And he went on, and then there's these other cases basically that they go on and people sue when they believe that a tax was a direct taxation. There's Pacific Insurance versus Seoul in 1869, all where these people are winning case after case after case. For example, inheritance taxes and all this stuff. And an income tax in 1881 was shot down. Pollock versus the Farmers Land Trust. A court accepted, you know, the fact that direct taxes were illegal. That's in 1895, and by 1913, we put it in case. And so the government's, in 1913, the 16th Amendment was ratified and exempted taxes on incomes from apportionment, which meant they could just start to really put the boots to us in general. Very concerning. Another thing, I guess, along those lines is fiat money. We have to understand fiat or decree money is immoral. Henry Ford, you know who that is. He started the Ford automobile. He said, the people must be helped to think naturally about money. They must be told what it is and what makes it money and what are the possible tricks of the present system which put nations and peoples under the control of the few. Henry Ford was basically explaining money. To understand money and how it works, it helps you to understand how those in power use it to control us. U.S. investors should welcome, not fear, you know, climbing commodity prices. The increases are a reflection of the fact that the pace of economic growth in the U.S. is picking up, says Nariman Bharavash, chief economist at Consultants, blah, 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 and a formal Federal Reserve official who's been covering the global economy for more than 35 years. He says it's nothing to be worried about in a Bloomberg article the other day. So today's, well, fiat money is immoral, okay? I'm trying to see where to start. Okay, so there's so much disinformation out there about money that it's scary when I look. I wrote the other day where a guy wrote, gold, which is effectively just another fiat currency, and on he goes. He obviously failed to look up the definition of fiat currency. People don't understand. Fiat money is money that has value only because of government regulation or law. The definition of fiat is an authoritative or often arbitrary official order or decree, which does not exist to gold as money today at all. Gold, silver, coins, whatever. These are items that literally have the value intrinsically built within them. It doesn't matter if you understand it or not. It is a timeless principle that has existed. You can verbally try to discount the value of anything. It doesn't make it true. So, for example, if I say real estate is always going to have value, and you say, well, what if it doesn't? It always will. The Bible says it always will. Just because you think that a scenario may exist someday where it doesn't, it always will. Now, what you may be asking is, what if the government takes it away? You know, and you're right. That's why there's risk in people buying waterfront property in third world countries like Mexico. You never know what kind of upheaval will hit that country and you'll have your property confiscated. I'm not going to disagree with that. The property will still have value. The value will just be in the hands of the government. But it will always have value. That's the same with precious metals. I get a lot of questions from, probably one of my number one questions I get from people on precious metals is, what if the government confiscates gold like they did, you know, back in the 30s or whatever? And my answer is simple. In the 30s, I'll try to keep it simple. Ha! We were on a gold standard. The reason that confiscation took place, and by confiscation, realize our government did buy the metal back from you. However, they paid a fraction of what they were intentionally going to move the value up to. So gold was at 20.20 an ounce for until they believed that they'd purchased back about 85% of the open source bullion, foreign coins, etc. And then they moved it to $35 an ounce, increasing the value of their own holdings by 75%, decreasing the people holding paper money with the gold clause by 37.5%. The reason they quote-unquote confiscated was simple. They had a lot of foreign debt that they had to pay back. These foreign nations came and said, look, you just had the big crash of 29. We don't want your paper money. We have no faith in it. We don't believe in it. Please don't try to pay off your debt with it. We want the real deal. We want gold. Well, what had happened since the Federal Reserve had begun was they had created about a 33 or 35 to 1 ratio of gold-backed money paper clause. In other words, it says this is redeemable in gold on the paper money. They had 35 of those to every 1 ounce. So basically 35 ounces were pledged on paper for every 1 ounce in reserve, which didn't belong to them anyway. It didn't belong to the government. The Fed had traded it all for Federal Reserve notes. The gold was also obligated to pay off foreign debt and belongs to others. It's been multiply dedicated different directions. It's no longer ours. That's why the big debate about the gold in Fort Knox, etc. So they had to try to bring the gold back in to pay off debt. Otherwise, they would have had to admit the system's a sham. It's a con. We've all been had. And it would have come unraveled and taken it apart. The only way the Federal Reserve System works is if it continues to grow. The only way that it ceases to exist is if we pay all the debt off. There's only been a couple times in history we could have paid all the debt off. The primary time was in the 90s under William Jefferson Clinton. We had the wealth coming into our nation from overseas. We could have easily paid it off, abolished the Federal Reserve, and been back on a gold standard. People argue the gold standard won't work for various reasons. That's deceptive. It's not true. Gold is not money under fiat in any country ever. The market is making gold as money, which is the opposite of fiat money. So if you do a brief thought exercise on why commodity money is preferable to fiat money. When you have fiat money a government, or in the case of the U.S. today, a banking cartel, which is the Federal Reserve, is granted exclusive authority to create the nation's money. Laws are used to enforce the use of this money. Otherwise, people probably wouldn't use it, okay? Under a commodity money system where, let's say, the U.S. issues dollars, but those dollars are backed or convertible to a commodity, as they were for so long, which is usually gold or silver. It could be other things, anything of true intrinsic value. There's a limit to the amount the government or banking cartel can print or issue, and that is in relation to the amount of the commodity that exists or is available to the government or central bank, right? So the current propaganda that's rife throughout economics textbooks, and trust me, I know because I studied it, tells us the notion that commodity money is bad because it stifles human innovation in relation to the amount of gold or whatever commodity is being used. They say this is bad and that there should be no limit on money creation based on something as arbitrary as a commodity because it's bad for growth. Okay, that's such a lie. But anyway, we'll continue on. It's complete nonsense, and they use this to keep people in our current fiat system where money power is exercised most egregiously by the very few elite against the masses, us. The reason they defend the current system is simple. With the power to create unlimited currency at will through our Federal Reserve, you possess total and absolute power over almost everything in the economy and society at large. If you think about it, you print money. If you're in control of money creation 100%, you control everything. The Fed not only creates the money, but they distribute it where they want. In the bailouts, QE1 and QE2, they decided to buy specific assets. In the case of QE1, where they bought toxic assets to help their banker buddies, it was just another bailout of banks and others that made poor investment decisions. Did the money go to build new schools? No. Did the money go to build high-speed trains as they do in other countries? No. Did it go to building out massive alternative energy infrastructures? No. It went to save the banks because at the end of the day, the Fed exists as a backstop to the banks. And it is to the banks that the Fed answers at the end of the day. It's a brilliant scam that 95% of Americans don't comprehend. So in this case, all the money is going to the banks, which destroyed our global economy in the first place and other players in the financial world. Remember, the banks are the Fed, and the Fed creates the money. Gatekeepers at the Fed and academia make understanding economics, the Fed, and money seem so complex. But the scam is very, very simple. You know, I'm not saying that the classic gold standard is the answer, but it's much more of a moral and genuine capitalistic system than what we have today. Another argument against the gold standard is that the rich have all the gold anyway, and they'll still have the power. Okay, well, let's suppose that was true. Under a gold standard, they'd need to mobilize this gold to exercise their power and influence and pay people off to do their bidding. In other words, spend their money. This has a real cost to them. You got to think about that. Gold would have to be spent. At some point, they choose not to spend it on these types of activities and behaviors because, or that, and they ultimately, you know, they'll lose their power or money by spending too much gold. They can't just create more out of thin air to exercise unlimited money power on the populace. Think about it with fiat currency. We just create more money to go to war. Oh, we go to war? Oh, we got to borrow more money. We got to create more money out of thin air from the Fed. Well, the Fed wants us to go to war. Well, in real war, in the old days, in a real monetary system, you run out of money. And it limits war. It's God's natural break on tyranny. Now, if someone declares war on you and they lose, and then you capture and you conquer and you know you get their wealth. This is why America doesn't conquer or capture, is because we just create wealth out of thin air. And you're like, okay, well, if that's the case, why does it keep working? Because we continue to expand it, and we have people convinced in faith because of an extraordinary long time building the credit of the United States of America. It's, you know, so the, when I was just talking about how they would have to, you know, they can't create gold out of thin air, that is in complete contrast to how things work today. With the dollar, they create more and more every day, and they buy people off without any real cost in the short term until ultimately this dollar collapses. This is why the most dangerous thing that can happen will be a global fiat currency to replace the U.S. dollar. They could start over in their never-ending system of money power with a new currency that will be printed at will and used by to buy up the world and all of its resources at no real cost to the banks or to the bankers or to the power brokers. The end result will be slavery for the masses of humanity, which is what they want. It's socialism. Remember, John Maynard Keynes created our economic system, and he stated specifically this is the necessary ingredient for Marxism to prevail. Our fiat currency system, which is slowly and actually more rapidly day by day consuming your wealth and your strength and your working ability and your ability to create wealth, it's sucking it dry like a parasite. It is designed to force us into socialistic slavery, okay? It really is. The global monetary system as it stands is one of the most immoral social structures ever created by man. Most of us in America, like I said, don't understand this since we've been the beneficiaries of it until recently. We are like the feudal lords in pre-revolutionary that couldn't see the world beyond their favored social status until they lost their heads. The system as it stands has led extreme exploitation and corruption, not true capitalism. If we continue on this path, the next stop is a feudalistic fascism. In a fiat currency system, banks have to be like utilities. I was reading about a conference here a few years ago where a guy spoke and said a good and healthy financial system is a small financial system. That's the truth. This is especially the case in a purely fiat money system. Money is too important to allow greedy children in inexpensive suits on Wall Street and dangerous academics at the Fed to play around with it. As we've come to this point in the world, you know, there are different debates over what the ideal monetary system is. But to be clear at this point, if we have a fiat system like today, the bank should be the most regulated industry on the planet, and they should operate like utilities. They're supposed to help the productive economy innovate and create wealth. They are not supposed to be parasites that suck the lifeblood out of the real economy and compose 16% of the weight in the S&P 500. With only technology being a bigger sector at 17%. There's something very wrong. I'm just telling you, many historians, you know, to explain how disconnected the corrupt elite class in the United States is today from the average system's hard. Many historians assert that Marie Antoinette never said let them eat cake, but surely she made comments similar to those at the top of, you know, that came off the top of her tongue. What's happening in this world now is nothing new. It's happened over and over again for many millennia. The elites of every era always think they'll stay in control no matter what, and let's hope they're wrong again. We need to realize this, folks. We've got to understand we have economic issues running amok. We are walking into severe hyperinflation right now. It says, you know, some, here's a quote, some experts say the Fed's interventions to lessen the recession is causing even greater hyperinflation. It's, you know, the banks are lending too much. The Fed quickly raises its reserve requirements, and on it goes. I won't get into that. I don't have the time. I say that a lot, and I apologize. But we are at in a situation that is breakneck runaway speed. Donald Trump has his advantages. When it comes to economics, not so much. He is running at breakneck speed to spend money. $385 billion, $385 billion with a B, on the opioid crisis. Think about this. Why the opioid crisis? George Bush had $385 billion assigned for pharmaceutical bills. And then Obama continued it through Obamacare. And now we have this opioid crisis. They want $385 billion for it over 10 years. Folks, that's a lot of money. You know, I hear statistics. People are ODing. People are dying. I'm not refuting it. 60 Minutes did a thing talking about, you know, where, you know, in this town of 35,000 in Pennsylvania, there's over 2 million opiates prescribed per year. Yeah, that's high. It's 6 per year per person. Or if you go by one-tenth, it's 60 per year per person. Or 120 per year per person if you're down to 5% of the population. You know, 120 pills a year is only one every 3 days. That's 5%. If you cut that in half and you go to 2.5%, it's 240 pills a year per person. That's not even one a day. You have to go down to 1% of the population filling a prescription until you get to one pill a day on those numbers. They sound astounding when they say a town of 35,000 prescribes 2 million pills a year. That sounds like a lot. But when you realize it, if only 1% of those people are taking one pill a day, that's more than what's being prescribed. So that stuff, they, you know, numbers and statistics people have to figure out and think about. I'm not saying it's all okay. But what I am saying, opiates have been around since the beginning of human history. There's been different times where countries have struggled with this. They have to figure out the causes of it. Obviously, they'll make laws and treat crime. But on the other side, why are people doing this? I mean, I'm going to tell you, I understand there's a lot of kids in this nation that are living at home, accomplishing very little, etc. But in general, there's a deeper issue at hand here in this country. And kids are hurting. I mean, we've got adults 25 to 34 years old living at home. I'm looking at a graph. Under Bush, 10%. Under Obama, he got it all the way up to almost 20%. We had a huge overrun of this kind of a thought process under Obama. We've had huge changes under Obama. He really brought us to the college kid mentality. His idea of real world is kids live at home with their parents. They tell their parents to pound it. They go out, they protest, they raise ruckus. Last week I was talking about what's going on with Obama. He's very involved. I talked about George Soros' Open Society Project. He's dedicated $1 billion a year, $1 billion a year to push these heavy-duty socialistic left-wing, he calls it liberal democracy causes, $1 billion a year to tear away at Trump. They've got secret society kids that go through college and get special law degrees. They've got these types of people all over embedded in our government, already controlling incredible power. They're all throughout our system. So we truly do have a serious concern. Obama's got this thing that he calls OFA, where he is actually controlling now huge parts of society. He's bucking the system. He's got incredible money. The Organization for Action, he calls it. And he's got like 35,000 volunteers, and they are allowed to fundamentally destroy this nation. They organize anti-Trump marches across U.S. cities. They're turning him into riots after Trump issued a temporary ban on immigration from seven terror-prone Muslim nations. The demonstrators jammed airports, chanting no ban, no wall, sanctuary for all. I mean, think about this. You know, these are old. It's being run by old Obama aides and campaign workers. And I mean, I don't have time to get into it right now. I will just tell you, folks, there is a concerted effort in this nation like never before. They're utilizing extraordinary amounts of money and technology to tear away at the fabric of our nation. It is having an impact. It's not getting better. If they get their way, he's got kids begging for socialism, for communism. And folks, what happens is the people that push for communism end up getting killed by communism. It's coming, unless we have a huge revolt or a huge revival, one or the other. There's got to be an awakening. The problem is the productive members of society have to go to work every day. The ones leading these riots and protests don't have a job. 95% of Antifa are living at home with mom and dad. This is what we're up against. We're up against pure foolishness. We're up against the media that's given them the time of day every day. And we've just, I don't know what the solution is, folks. We need truthful media for starters. Cost of living from 75 to 17 has gone crazy. I've got all these statistics I didn't get to today. To make it simple, folks, I really don't spend much time plugging the metals. I'm telling you, God made a simple system. People asked me the other day, you know, how's that going to play out in the end times? God makes it crystal clear. Three times in the Bible, you're going to throw your gold and the silver in the streets on his final last bell, day of wrath, the final, final bell. It's all over heaven. He made a system that works. He tells us to use it. Give Coins Plus a call. That's what we do. We build portfolios. Don't procrastinate. You got everything to gain, nothing to lose. I assure you, you're not investing in something random and crazy. It's a very simple process. So just give us a call locally, 444-0044. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care. God bless. We'll be back for Wednesday. Bye-bye.